From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. Earlier this week, the House Government Operations Subcommittee conducted a hearing on the route forward for the Postal Service, at which time several mailers and academics testified along with the National Association of Letter Carriers. NAPS Executive Vice President Chuck Mulliter submitted testimony and was formally recognized by Chairman Pete Sessions and Ranking Democrat Kwasi Mifume at the hearing for his input. The hearing takeaways were that there needs to be an immediate pause in further implementation of the Delivering for America plan. Interestingly, they were on-the-record musings about privatizing mail processing and logistics, and also reconstituting postal governance. Also, there was some discussion about whether the Postal Service is overstaffed. After the hearing, NAPS engaged with several committee members on these issues. In addition, over the past week, the postal employee community, particularly those employed as postal supervisors, managers, and postmasters, was subjected to heightened anxiety over the budget reconciliation process. As you may recall, the House passed legislation would have forced newly employed and promoted EAS-level postal employees to choose between accepting employment as an at-will hire or being penalized with a 5% reduction in take-home pay for seeking merit-based job protection. For those who are unfamiliar with the term of at-will hire, an at-will hire can be fired for virtually any reason or for no reason whatsoever. This at-will provision would not have included postal craft employees. In addition, the House passed bill would levy a $350 user fee for EAS-level postal employees who seek due process through the Merit Systems Protection Board. There were several other provisions that would have harmed the non-postal federal workforce by taxing payroll withholdings for union dues and for charitable contributions. The initial Senate language drafted last week by Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee Chair Rand Paul of Kentucky would have targeted newly hired and promoted EAS-level employees as well as federal employees who agreed to be hired at will with a 5% pay reduction through increased FERS contributions. For those who wanted merit-based protections, the increased FERS contribution would have been 10%, double the amount of at-will hired. In addition, the original Senate language would have forced the Postal Service to auction off its electric vehicle fleet and associated infrastructure, with the proceeds being deposited in the U.S. Treasury. As a result of violating the so-called Byrd Rule in the Senate, the at-will hire provision, the Merit Systems Protection Board provision, and the electric vehicle provision were all dropped from the bill. However, midweek, Senator Paul revised his text to comply with the Byrd Rule. So going to the Senate floor, possibly this weekend, the text impacting postal employees includes a 5% reduction in take-home pay as a result of increased FERS contributions for all postal and federal employees hired on or after January 1st, 2026. In addition, Senator Paul tweaked the Merit Systems Protection Board filing fee language so that it would now appear to comply with the Byrd Rule. The 10% tax on payroll withholdings charged to the receiving organizations would not, I repeat, would not apply to postal employees. We expect the Senate to vote on the reconciliation bill over the weekend. And if the Senate passes the bill, the House would take it up next week. So our guest on this week's NAPS Chat, should not plan on his July 4th district work period just yet, but then again, he does not have to travel too far to his congressional district. I am pleased to welcome this week's episode of Naps Chat guest, a member of Congress who assumed his seat this past January, Representative Suhas Subramaniam. The congressman represents the 10th congressional district of Virginia, which is in Northern Virginia, aka suburban Washington, D.C. Representative Subramaniam served 5 years in the Virginia legislature and has vast technology expertise. Interestingly, the congressman is also a volunteer firefighter and an emergency medical technician. Welcome to Naps Chat, Congressman.
Thanks for having me.
When we first met, and this was prior to the 2024 election at a Starbucks in Northern Virginia, where Virginia Naps legislative chair Deborah Holley accompanied me, I think we briefly spoke about your expectations, assuming you were elected, which you in fact were. Congratulations. Now that it's been about 6 months since you were sworn in, is this what you expected?
This is what I expected from Congress. This is not what I expected as far as this administration. The chaos that they've created is far worse than I thought. The boldness of their willingness to break the law and push the limits of the Constitution and the president's powers has also been very surprising to me, honestly. I knew this president didn't have many boundaries, but to see what they've done has been pretty eye-opening. And so, but, you know, I'm ready for the fight. I care a lot about my community, and our community is being hurt a lot by this president right now. So I see it as my job to be here to stand up for it.
Let's talk about the community that you represent for a moment. You brought special, unique skills to Congress, and that has enabled you to represent your community, who include a very large number of federal and postal employees. Can you talk about how your interaction with this community helps you represent them and fight for them in Congress?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, federal workers, postal workers, they are, they're my neighbors, my friends. I see them at the kids' birthday parties and, you know, at the library. And so it's, you know, these attacks on postal workers, federal workers are very personal. And I know what's going on at these agencies very well because I talk to them all the time. And these are not folks who are lazy. These are not folks who should be writing their five things to do every week. These are folks that could probably be making more money in the private sector who have special skills or just a lot of experience and deserve to be treated better. And they came to the federal government because they wanted to serve our country in a lot of ways. And it was also a good job and with good pay. And we do that. We give that good job with solid pay because we need the best and brightest in our federal government to serve us, whether it's in the Postal Service or whether it's in NIH. And so, you know, it's very personal to our district when the president and this administration attacks federal workers and contractors and postal workers.
Let's drill down a little bit on that. You, among your three committee assignments, you serve on the Committee on Oversight and Accountability, which deals with postal and federal civil service issues. Over recent years, the committee has become very contentious, and the federal workforce appears to be in this administration's crosshairs, as you just mentioned. What do you think can be done on the committee? What do you think you can do to help fight for and protect the federal and postal workforce?
Yeah, absolutely. A couple things. One, you know, I've signed on to bills, right? Protecting federal workers, protecting postal workers, protecting retirees, even bills to make sure we don't privatize the Postal Service, for instance. Certainly been trying to champion a lot of those issues. But, you know, those bills aren't going anywhere right now, unfortunately. But what we can do, though, is make the statement, make it loud, tell the stories of postal workers and federal workers generally, and tell people how it's going to damage every single American. This isn't just about some workers in Virginia. It's about everyone and how it's going to impact them. And so, you know, if you want your Christmas gifts to get on time, if you want your Valentine's Day cards to get there on time, if you want your business to be able to ship things on time and be able to do commerce in this country, we need a strong postal service that is supported by this Congress. And the other thing is, you know, trying to back channel and just have those conversations with the other side of the aisle, either directly or indirectly. I think we have to find long term. I'd like to see more bipartisan support. I know we have some, but there needs to be more widespread support for what our postal service does and what for federal workers do generally.
Let me
follow up on that. Yeah. I understand, based upon your comments to me at different in different venues, that you pride yourself on working with virtually any member of Congress, no matter their ideology. Could you talk about the committee chemistry that the Oversight and Accountability Committee has a very, very wide range of ideological fissions on it. So can you talk about how you deal with individuals, members of Congress, who may not share the same ideology you might have?
Yeah, you know, the Oversight Committee is very political. I think I'm one of the few on the Democratic side who's not in the Progressive Caucus, and most on the Republican side are also pretty, far right in their politics and take pride in that. So, you know, it can be hard on the surface to find areas of agreement, but I always say that, you know, you don't have permanent friends or permanent enemies generally. And, you know, your enemy on one issue might be your friend on the next. And if you can find common ground with someone and put the personalities aside, that's why we were sent to Congress. I think we were sent to Congress to stand up for our constituents, to deliver for the American people, and not to get social media likes and not to, not for ourselves. And so I try not to take things personally. I try not to go after members of Congress personally. I try to stick to the issues. Even and when I respond or criticize another member, it's about their beliefs and what they said, and having a substantive conversation, not about their appearance or anything like that, right? And by doing that, I've found that it's not hard to find areas of agreement. You're not going to agree on guns and abortion, but you can agree on certain protecting federal worker retiree benefits, for instance. We found some agreement, and so just things like that. You have to keep these relationships and be able to work with people to get things done.
Let me mention one of your former colleagues who unfortunately recently passed away, who was the ranking Democrat on the panel. Your districts abutted one another at some points. Jerry Connolly. You're the representative of Virginia now, who sort of, inherits the mantle of leadership on the issue, at least in Virginia. How do you feel about that?
I think we'll have some help in September, hopefully soon. We'll have a new member joining us from the 11th District. But Jerry was an icon in Virginia. He was a legend. When people were talking about the legacy of Jerry Connolly after he passed, it's just the same consistent story, which was he was a fighter, he was a bulldog, but even Republicans respected him and wanted to work with him. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he found a lot of ways to work with Chairman Comer, even in times that were very turbulent. And Chairman Comer had a lot of respect for Jerry Connolly. And they got a lot of bills done together. Did a lot of great work for Virginians. And so, I just think, you know, he's a great example of, you know, some of the things that we can accomplish if we work together. He was also always named one of the best legislators in Virginia when it came to being an advocate and getting things done. So he's a great model to follow.
He always prided himself on being labeled the most effective member of Congress, period.
Yes.
Now let's talk about something that the committee recently did, and that's about the reconciliation bill. And it was approved by your committee by a single vote. I know you spoke against the bill and voted against it both during the committee deliberations and on the House floor. Could you talk a little bit about the bill?
You know, the bill's a mess. I mean, even now you're seeing the Senate parliamentarian is striking down big pieces of it. Depending on when this interview is aired, it's going to probably change from hour to hour. But I'll just tell you this. Even a lot of Republicans kind of understand the bill has a lot of problems, but they just feel like they can't cross this president in any sort of way. And, that's going to mean a lot of people are going to lose their Medicaid benefits, and it's going to mean a lot of folks can't get access to affordable food, and it's going to hurt a lot of federal workers and postal workers. So, as I, look at what the future is going to look like, a bill like this makes the problems in our country of income inequality and, the disparity between the haves and haves not even worse. And so You know, the buzzer is probably a good indication that, you know, we've got a lot going on today. But I just think that I hope Republicans will reconsider what they're doing here and try to find a bipartisan bill instead.
Let's talk about the Postal Service a couple of minutes. You mentioned about your opposition to postal privatization, and Secretary of Commerce Howard Lutnick, in addition to privatization, was talking about folding it into the Department of Commerce. Could you talk about your views about the Postal Service and the importance to your constituents?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if people want to pay double for shipping, then and privatizing the Postal Service is a great thing for them. But if people want things to be able to get from point A to point B on time and reliably, if they want to be able to do business and have businesses small and big be able to do business, we need the Postal Service. It's one of the engines of our economy, and privatizing it would be a huge disaster. It would be one of the worst things we can do for our country from an economic perspective. And so I've always been against and always will be against privatization of the Postal Service. And I can't imagine, you know, you tell me if every Republican supports this initiative. I don't think so. I think they realize, especially the people who, you know, feel like they need to govern, they realize the damage you could do by privatizing the Postal Service.
With your permission, I'd like to explore your role as a member of the new generation, a new generation of Congress, and you were raised with a high-tech perspective. Is there a generational split in the House of Representatives? I'm not talking about partisanship. I mean a generational split. And how do you relate to other members of the freshman class? And thirdly, do you have a mentor?
Yeah, well, we get assigned a mentor. Mine's Jake Auchincloss from Massachusetts. He has young kids like me. He's on the younger side like me. And I think, you know, we certainly, I don't think there's a split per se, but certainly like the younger members, you know, we want to push the envelope a little bit. We want to take more risks. We want to be a little louder, a little bolder sometimes. The older members have been here a while, and they, you know, they tend to prefer to pick their battles and choose their spots a little more. And, you know, so and then sometimes it's not always about age. There's some older members who do like to be innovative and creative and do things, and younger members who do like to be a little more passive and let the issues come to them.
Let's go back to your 2024 election, if we can. It was not a landslide. You are in a fairly competitive district. You defeated your opponent by less than 5 percentage points. Could you talk about the issues that enabled you to cross the finish line, and what issues do you think you're going to bring or you're going to focus on for the duration of this Congress?
Yeah, you know, last year was a hard year to run as a Democrat, to be honest. You know, it was, there was a lot of headwinds. I felt like I would try, you know, state my position on an issue, and people wouldn't believe me. They're like, well, the Democratic Party is just lost right now. I can't bring myself to vote for a Democrat right now. And so, you know, we felt like we would win, but it was about the margin, and the margin was smaller than we thought because of those challenges. I think in my own life, and you know, I'm a dad. I've got bills to pay. Things are expensive. It's getting more and more expensive to live in Virginia, and so I think about, you know, what would I want my member of Congress to do and solve? And so to me, that's, you know, protect the workforce in our area and lower costs and you know, make everyone's lives a little better. And a lot of that involves fighting this administration, to be honest.
Great. I noticed that the bells went off as you referenced, so I'm going to let you go at this point. And I want to thank you. I want to thank Congressman Subramaniam for joining us this week on this week's NAPS Chat. Thank you, Congressman.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And I want to thank NAPS Chat listeners for logging on this week. If you enjoy NAPS Chat, please leave us a positive review in the podcast platform of your choice. And more importantly, share NAPS Chat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
And write myself a letter and make